And welcome to Magic by Design. If you're listening for the first time, thanks so much for stopping by. We are delighted to have you with us for our first show of 2021.
You're so self-conscious about the hours.
Gar, we're not even one line into 2021.
I couldn't even let you do the intro. Usually I'm actually nice enough to let you do the intro before being mean about it. But hour is the word Ken hates the most when having to do the intro. And for some reason, he still writes it into the intro every week. Clearly, it's some kind of like self-punishment thing.
Some self-flagellation. I'm trying to overcome adversity, Garrett.
Your New Year's resolution is to say the word hour in the podcast intro.
See, as an Irish person, my instinct is to say hour.
Hour.
And for an international audience, they might get confused.
Yes.
So I'm trying to pronounce it better. Hour. So, like, my new thing is say the word hour.
Yeah, which is just the word hour, as in H-O-U-R.
It's getting there.
So what if people are confused? What if they think it's the hour podcast, and if we go longer than an hour, we just get shut off, instead of our podcast, which is the podcast that belongs to you and me, rather than our podcast, which is just grammatically incorrect. Continue with the intro.
This podcast is on a mission to watch and review every Disney animated feature film released in cinemas. In each episode, we watch a classic Disney movie, then we talk about it, and there's even a little song at the end. What more could you want from a Disney-themed podcast? Nothing, that's what. This week, we watched Disney's 36th animated feature, Mulan, but before we get down to business to review yet another Disney animated classic, allow me to introduce myself. I'm Ken, you heard Gar, or Garrett. He's my brother. He's my co-host. He interrupted me yet again.
I'm nice. People love me.
You should make a New Year's resolution to be nicer to me.
I'm always nice to you.
You said it last week that you would be nicer to me, and then you broke it instantly.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But like, to be fair, I do this with all of the people I host podcasts with. I be mean to them, so I'm the bad guy, and you're the underdog everybody roots for.
So you're being cruel to be kind.
Yes, I'm actually generous when you think about it.
I don't buy it. Gar Mulan.
It's 2021.
It is. As we record this, it's the first day of 2021.
Yes, this is actually a rare evening. I don't think we've ever done an evening record, have we?
Yes, this is the latest we've recorded the podcast. It is nearly 11 p.m. as we speak.
Yeah, an evening record, which is unusual. Usually we record sometime between 2 and 4 in the afternoon, pretty traditionally. This is an evening record. I don't know how I feel about it.
I feel more like radio-y for some reason.
Oh, we're in the depths of bedtime and we're right here playing you some smooth jazz.
Yeah, just I feel like warm and cuddly, and we have the soft lighting here, so let me talk to you about a Disney podcast while you fall asleep.
You're doing the Parks and Rec character, basically.
Yeah.
Parks and Rec public radio, dude.
There's a podcast, I can't remember the name of it, and there's a guy who literally, his podcast is to put you to sleep.
Yeah.
It's really good. He talks like in a really monotonous voice about nonsense, and he rambles on for about an hour, and I've never gotten more than like 20 minutes into it.
So it works?
Yeah, it works pretty well.
Well, ASMR is a whole genre about that. Like, literally, a subgenre of content has built around that kind of soothing, nothing content that lulls you off into a peaceful state of zen.
Yeah, there's a lot of apps that people use, especially this time of year, based around mindfulness and meditation that have gotten into the sleep game as well.
Okay, we're going to start for the rest of this podcast, henceforth, and the rest of the episodes, we're going to talk in that really low and unintrusive voice where you are lulled off, and we speak in these kind of sentences that just calmly and smoothly trail off in the end, so you fall asleep. And that's then we can pitch our podcast as ASMR as well and get more listeners.
We're going to talk about the 1998 movie Mulan in these strange truncated sentences as you fall deeper a deeper sleep.
I'm going to skip Mulan first, and I'm going to go straight to the live-action version of Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Listen, we were sitting down yesterday, the day before. It was yesterday, wasn't it?
It was the day before yesterday.
The day before yesterday.
It was yesterday. This week has been terrible.
Yeah, this is the week where days don't mean anything and hours don't mean anything. And what happened to come on was the live-action remake of Beauty and the Beast. And I have never been more horrified by something in my life. I hate it. Hate it.
Keeping in mind, Gar only watched about 10 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, and like, I clearly haven't seen a frame of it. Because I saw like the designs of like the Beast and Cogsworth. And I'm just like, no.
Hand wave.
Oh God, it's like a horror film. And it has the same problem that the Lion King remake has, in that all of these characters, the personality is just stripped out of them. So it's just like, it's some weird nightmarish candlestick come to life in a way that is legitimately terrifying. And like the last scene I watched before we left was the cabinet opening, the dresser and drawers opening, talking to Belle, and it's like legitimately terrifying. It's like, that is straight out of a horror film. Why isn't she screaming? This is terrifying.
Yeah, they've gone for that ultra realistic motif where it's based on, you know, French architecture, French furniture and French candlesticks and stuff. So it's more realistic, but has much less charm. And as you said, it's kind of uncanny valley in a way and weird.
It's going to age. It looks terrible. It looks actually quite bad by now 2021 standards, but it's going to age worse than the original film did. We're going to watch that film in 15, 20 years time and think it looks absolutely abysmal. You know, when you watch bad CGI from like the 90s and 80s, it's going to look like that. It's going to look like Ivan Ooze melting from Power Rangers. It's going to look that bad.
Yeah, it has been stylized within an inch of its life.
I was so upset by it. It was like, no, all of, and like the songs, I only heard one song, I only heard Gaston's song.
I've seen this movie, I watched it on my own one day, and I was scared like you were.
Yes.
And they don't treat any of the songs in a way that I enjoyed.
Well, like, my problem was, like, it was a straight cover. Like, legitimately, they could have just been lip-syncing to the original one from the 1991 animated film. They could have been, for all I know, because it sounded exactly the same.
Fun fact, the Russians banned this movie because LeFou is portrayed as gay.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Well, classic Russians. Can't be trusted. But yes, Beauty and the Beast live. We might actually go in, like, eventually.
I was going to say, like, we're going to run out of content and we're going to have to skip this one because you've already given your take.
Yeah, eventually we'll do all of
Disney. Well, you have to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, we'll do all of Disney. We'll do all of Pixar. We'll do all of the Toon films. We'll do all of the Disney Channel films. And we'll eventually have to come around to, like, live action remakes. Though, actually, no, we'll have straight to DVD sequels as well. We'll have those to get through before we get to live action remakes. So, who knows? If this podcast goes long enough, we may talk in depth about Beauty and the Beast someday. But I detested it. Like, with every fiber of my being, I don't know why they did that to that movie.
And they had Emma Watson as Belle.
Who you irrationally hate.
I don't irrationally hate her. She was a good choice in terms of the characterization of Belle, but she can in fact not sing.
Classic Ken hating Emma Watson.
So they auto-tuned her.
You hate Emma Watson.
They auto-tuned. I don't hate her. I just thought she was an odd choice.
Definitely, you hate Emma
Watson. Why choose her in a singing role where she's not a singer? She's a good actress.
You got upset at her recently because it's like, I can only see Hermione, and that's a you problem. I'm sorry. Leave the poor one alone.
Well, in fairness, it's not her fault because from the point she was about 10 years old to she was like 21, she was Hermione.
Yeah.
So I'm finding it hard to see her in other things and buy her in other roles. That's a me thing. I'm working on it. It's one of my resolutions for 2021.
Get over the irrational hatred of Emma Watson.
Hatred is a strong word, Gar, and I don't want to start 21 being portrayed as a woman hater. Thank you very much.
No, it's just Emma Watson. I never said you were a woman hater. You hate the entire gender. You just hate one woman, and it's Emma Watson.
I don't hate her. I just thought she was wrong for this movie.
I will fully embrace the word hate for the Beauty and the Beast life. Like, it really does crush me to think, like, that film made $1 billion. So that means a lot of people saw that film, and yes, a lot of probably young people saw that film.
I know where you're going with this.
So, like, if that's their version of that film, that's a tragedy compared to, like, the legitimate masterpiece the original is. Like, it's an utter tragedy if that's their version of that film.
And there's this phenomenon now. Each of the ones that have had a live-action remake, when you go to search the songs on Spotify, it's actually really hard to find the originals because they always push the soundtrack of the live-action versions on you.
Same thing when I googled Mulan just there. It came up. 2020 film, which I haven't seen, so...
I haven't seen it either.
I can't give out about it.
You should have watched it for this, shouldn't we?
I'll see it in passing in, like, 7 episodes and spend the first 15 minutes of the podcast talking about it, just like we have Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, and you'll be horrified by it, or... Eh.
Yeah, but actually, you know, my biggest problem will be, I was going to say, Ken, let's get down to business and start the podcast, but that song's not in the remake, so who cares?
They jettisoned most of the songs. They kept the soundtrack and you get the motif of the songs in the film, but no songs.
The score version of I'll Make a Man Out of You is in there?
I can't remember. There's definitely a score version of Reflection.
Have you seen it?
No.
Any of it?
No.
So you don't know? You're just guessing?
From the trailer. I'll get around to it.
But the best part of this film is I'll Make a Man Out of You. Why would you take it out? It's like, yeah. All right, we're going to take Mulan, we're going to remake Mulan, but that bit everybody likes, let's take that out.
Literally ripping out the heart of the movie.
Yes.
I wonder, you could.
It's like if you did a live action Pocahontas and didn't put Colors of the Wind in the film.
I know they wanted it to be a serious action film, but I reckon you could have snuck that in there and kept it as a serious tone.
It didn't have to be sung, I would have said. Like, you could have just had someone do a version of the song and played over a montage. Like, it didn't have to be the characters singing the song, but you could have still put the song in the film. Because, like, that's the song is a montage. It's a great montage.
Does a lot of heavy lifting for the story, it does.
Disney loves, it's like, all right, we have a ton of stuff we have to get through. How are we going to get through it? Montage. And it works.
Yeah, like, there's, you know, Tarzan does it, Hercules does it very effectively, The Lion King famously, and this movie as well.
Yeah, so why would you take it out? Why would you look at it as like, all right, we're doing Mulan? And actually, I'm a hypocrite because I'm always like, they should do something new and original with these live-action remakes. And when they do, I'm like, no, give me the song I like. But still, give me the song I like.
They should make two versions, one for kiddies and one for adults.
Yeah, they should do a director's cut where they just put the song in.
Girl, I remember seeing Mulan in the cinema. Not many of them I do early on.
Yeah, we saw it with Mom in the gate in town, I remember distinctly.
She did, she brought us, and I do break this movie out from time to time, if only to hear one of the greatest Disney bops of all time, of course.
This is only my second time seeing it after that first time. I have not seen any of those films since we originally saw it in the cinema. I don't remember, like, I remember going to see it in the cinema, but I don't remember seeing the actual film. You know, I don't remember, like, the actual plot of the film, but I remember going to see the film.
I remember very distinctly the bit where she runs away, seeing that in the cinema, but I don't remember much else. This film, for me, having watched it with a critical eye, really shows Disney at the height of their 90s prowess. Some see this film as the peak for this fertile period, meaning it would be gradually downhill from here.
Well, you see, like, I could at no point call this the peak, because it's like, it's not better than The Lion King, it's not better than Beauty and the Beast. So you can't really, so it's more like the Disney Renaissance is like a series of, like, mountains.
Peaks and valleys.
You go up and you go down, you go up, and then, like, there's the steep decline, but there's not a steep decline, because you still get Lilo and Stitch, you still get Brother Bear. So, like, you still get good stuff. So it's more like you go down from Everest to, like, a smaller mountain range, and then you start climbing back up Everest again to stretch the metaphor further beyond recognition. Yeah, I think this is a good film.
I think there is a case that this is a coalescence of a lot of the elements that have been successful in previous films, and they've perfected them, like 3D, going for a stylized version of animation, songs. There's a pretty good script here, strong storytelling. So, yeah.
It's interesting. I was reading some criticism of the film where they were like, it's very formulaic. And I wouldn't disagree. But I wouldn't lob that as a criticism either, though.
Yeah, it works.
It is this, like, as you said, I think this is more like people who are very good at what they do, doing what they do very well. Which I would say is to a degree formulaic. So you do hit a lot of beats because these people have this down to like a science at this stage, but they have it down to a science. Like, they know what they're doing. It's like eating at a fine restaurant and getting exactly what you wanted. It doesn't surprise you. It doesn't do anything you didn't think it would do, but it is delicious. That's what this is.
And you'll pay a heck load of money for it.
And you won't be shouting, "It's rotten!" at the screen.
I've eaten it.
It's frozen! No, wait, that doesn't come for another like 20 years.
Good one, Gary.
I did that joke before.
You got there before me. Mulan was the first of three features produced primarily at the Disney Animation Studio at Disney MGM Studios, now Disney Hollywood Studios at Bay Lake, Florida. So,
isn't it weird to think they were making films in the theme park?
Yeah, they were. They literally had an animation division there. Did a lot of heavy lifting on some of these really classic films.
They shut it down in like the mid-2000s, but like, it's wild to think, you know, under like the Rock and Roller Coaster or whatever, there's people just like slaving away at Mulan.
There probably was a stage where you could have gone on a tour watching them make these movies. That would have been cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably not a fun work environment. It's like, guys, we have a deadline.
Put the whip away. The tourists are here.
These people gawking at me is weird and hurting my productivity.
Development for the film began in 1994 when a number of artistic supervisors were sent to China to receive artistic and cultural inspiration. So, Gary, I wanted to touch on this quickly.
Research?
Paris.
Yeah.
Africa.
Uh-huh.
China.
Uh-huh.
Where else have they gone? Greece, yes. And Turkey. They went somewhere. It wasn't for the Rescuers Down Under. It was before
France. They went to Paris. They went to Australia for the Rescuers, didn't they?
Did they?
I'm pretty sure they did.
I can't remember.
I'm fairly certain that's where we had the first conversation about these people taking paid vacations.
Yeah. Oh, they went to London for Basil of Baker Street as well.
Yeah, which would have been the first.
Sorry, the Great Mouse Detective. That was the original name.
Yeah. So these people, like, where are we going to? It's like, where do we want to go on holiday? I mean, where do we want to set our next very important film?
Some, like, you know,
this is the reason Treasure Planet kept on getting bumped along. It's like, we want to do Treasure Planet. It's like, we can't take a holiday to space.
Yeah.
So let's do the Paris one.
Can we? Mulan was released in June 1998 and was well received by critics and the public alike.
Wait, that's the, when you think about the films that they made that weren't well received, the ones they didn't go anywhere for.
Yeah.
You know, Atlantis couldn't go anywhere. Well, Chicken Little? What are they, Meet the Robinsons? What are they going to do? Go to suburban America?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, if you're a happy workforce, you're a productive workforce.
Yeah, so they needed the holidays. Anyway, Mulan was well received.
They praised the animation, plot, and characters, particularly Mulan, and the musical score. We'll talk about that later. I'm not so sure.
What, the musical score?
Okay, we'll get there.
The score's great.
It's great, but okay, we'll get there.
I think the score in this film is really good.
Okay, we are have a format. I need to remind you in 2021.
You brought it up. You're the one that brought up the score.
Okay.
And I'm here to tell you it's good, but Ken disagrees. But he's not going to tell you why he disagrees.
For another 30 minutes.
Because of the format.
The film grossed over $304 million. That's $484 million in 2020 against a budget of...
2021. What's in 2021, Ken, if it's that in 2020?
Well, the difference is a day, so I imagine it's the same.
What if there was hyperinflation in the last day?
Well, actually, given the world that we live in, that's entirely possible. Against a budget of $90 million, that's $143 million in 2020, or 2021, sorry. So moving on first here to animation. Mm-hmm. To achieve a harmonious visual look, producer, designer Hans Bacher and art director Rick Sluter, along with Robert Walker and head of backgrounds Robert Stanton, collaborated to establish a proper chronological location for this film in Chinese history. It's based on a legend, we'll talk about that in a while, so there is not a lot of consensus around when this actually took place. So they based the visual design on the Ming and Qing dynasties.
That seems like, so they based it on two dynasties?
Yeah, somewhere in between the two.
How long would those two dynasties have lasted?
I'm not an expert in Chinese history, but they do last quite a long time, possibly even decades.
That seems like we wanted to be very specific, so we picked a very broad time range in which to set it.
One of the things I found interesting here was an important element of the design was to use a style of art close to Chinese painting with watercolor and simpler design, as opposed to the details that we see in the likes of The Lion King and Hunchback of Notre Dame. So it has that really nice opening with the flowing lines of the Japanese calligraphy and art. And
it's Chinese calligraphy, but go on.
No.
You just refuse?
Yep, I refuse.
You said Japanese!
I'm not... Well, do you know what? You could have said it after the podcast so I can edit it in. I'm not continuing the podcast until you promise to be nice to me this year.
Listen, this is just maintaining a quality standard on our podcast. I will not let the quality slip for our dear listeners. Ken's so salty.
Additional inspiration was found in earlier Disney animated films such as Bambi, Pinocchio, and Dumbo, which were used to establish a sense of staging. And it's hard to describe this movie because it does have a bang of the Disney house style, as we said, but there's a fluidity and a kind of sensitivity to the colour palette that makes it really pleasing to the eye. And it's not so much like a very drastic stylistic choice, but you do see that harmony of colours and lines and one scene flows very nicely to the other. So you go from Mulan's home, you go to the army camp, and then you're in the mountains. And they're very stark locations, but it just flows very nicely from one to the other.
I think the first, 10 minutes of this film look very pretty. Yes. With Mulan's town, Mulan's village, even her home, the way it's set up, a river and all the trees and stuff, it looks very nice. And I think the last 10 minutes of this film looks very pretty when they go to, the entire kingdom of with the emperor and all that fun stuff. And then they go back to Mulan's home. I think that middle bit is kind of bland. It's the army camp, which is an army camp. How nice can it look? It's a bunch of tents. And then the rest of the film is set in a mountain range, which it's a mountain range. It's a bunch of pointy rocks and snow. How nice can it look?
I did think the snow was rendered very nicely.
And it was white. They put white on the screen.
The battle sequence in the mountain pass is visually spectacular, especially...
I think the 3D is great.
Yeah, especially the Huns charging over the hill and the avalanche.
Which I'd imagine is the same effect you're about to point out that they used for The Lion King and for Hunchback to create those large crowds.
Similar, but they actually created yet more new software, Gar.
Ooh.
To create the 2,000 Hun soldiers during the attack sequence, the production team developed a crowd simulation software called Attila the Hun. Mm-hmm. This software allows thousands of unique characters to move autonomously. A variant of the program called Dynasty was used in the final battle sequence to create a crowd of 3,000 in the Forbidden City. And Pixar's photorealistic API RenderMan, which not many people know. Pixar started as a software company. They sold RenderMan, and particularly Disney was one of their major clients, which is what started their relationship.
And then they were like, hey guys, we can actually use this to make things ourselves.
So that was used to render the crowd. Another software developed in the movie was Foaplane, which was used to add depth to flat two-dimensional paintings. Although developed late in the production progress, Foaplane was used in 5 shots, including the dramatic sequence in which features of the Great Wall of China are shown, and the final battle sequence when Mulan runs to the Forbidden City. So, you know, when they showed the Great Wall of China, that was a 2D painting that they made to look 3D.
Wow.
Very cool.
Because I think the particularly the Hun scene, it looks really good. Yeah. And not like, it looks really good, but, which is what you would have said for Hunchback, where it's like, it looks really good, but, you know, it's already 3D. I think it looks really good without qualification.
I think the snow helps it because it's a blanket canvas.
Yes, and there's no, like, details underneath them. It's literally just a white background below them. So that probably does help to make it, like, easy to animate.
But the visual impressiveness of them coming over that pass and then swarming down the hillside, and then there's a cool shot of Shan Yu's hawk, or whatever, it's an eagle, whatever.
I think
Eagle! Like, swooping down over the Huns as they invade. Yeah. It's very cool stuff.
It looks great. It looks like, objectively, I think it might be not the best use of 3D, but certainly the most seamless use of 3D so far. Because it's not the point at which you'd be like, oh, it's the 3D animation part of this film, which you are for so many of these films, where it's like, ah, that's the bit they used 3D for. Did they need to? Not really. But here, they did, because how else do you render 2,000 people without people breaking their backs for 2 years?
Yeah, it really...
I guess breaking their hands.
Yeah.
You animate with your hands, not with your back.
Yeah. Well, you're bent over at the animation desk, so I imagine...
You could get a standing desk.
They didn't have those back then. Those were created by the Danes in the early 2000s.
You get one of those balls you can sit on.
Yeah, that's a more of a modern phenomenon.
Gamer chair?
Gamer chair. Didn't have gamer chairs back then, Gar.
They didn't have gamers back then. Gamers weren't represented in society yet.
No, they were still in basements.
Now, when you look at how much gamers are represented in society and see society is crumbling. Not going to put 2 and 2 together there, but, you know, as a gamer myself.
That's a story for a different podcast.
I'm a gamer. Are you a gamer, Ken? You finished Untitled Goose Game yesterday.
I finished 3 games in 2020. I'm pretty proud of myself.
Pretty sure that gives you your gamer license.
Yeah, that's why I think it's the most games I finished in a year, so I'm getting there.
Oh, 3. Oh, I read 1 book last year. I kept the list. 1 book. Welcome to Nightfale. That wasn't even a particularly good book. It was fine.
That was one of my goals for 2020, to read more, and I did.
How many books did you read?
Like 3 or 4.
That's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's like...
Well, the problem is that I always set the Goodreads target at like 20. And it's like, no.
I had designs at one point. I think it was 2019. I didn't do it in 2020 to read a book a week. That broke down. It broke down pretty quickly.
See, I think that's the trap we set for ourselves, where we're like, I must do this. So like, instead of reading for pleasure, reading is a very pleasurable thing, reading rules. Why don't I do it more? It's a dumb mental thing. I'm stupid. But when you set the target, reading becomes like this compulsory exercise. So you're reading to tick a box, and reading then becomes no longer a pleasurable experience, but rather a work more than anything else. And then we turn something that should be fun into something that's not fun.
Yeah, I have a particular skill of creating anxieties for myself where there are none.
Yes.
So like, if work is going fine and I'm hitting some of my goals, I'm like, I have to read. And if I don't read, I'm a failure.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I think you're right there. You set these things for yourself instead of, and you're setting these rigid rules where you should just do it for the enjoyment of it rather than...
You should read because books are great.
And not for the sake of hitting arbitrary goals.
Yes. You shouldn't read to be seen reading. You should read to read.
Like, I took like maybe 15 selfies, you know, reading books, and I only read 4 books, and I'm just put my glasses on. It's like
Instagram full of pictures with you and books.
Wear my glasses on my nose to look intelligent.
You've actually just bought book covers and you're just placing them on front of one book. It's very cost effective.
Yes. And people are none the wiser.
Yeah, they think you've read all these books. You think you're such a cultured man.
Speaking of books, Gar, the story of Mulan is inspired by the legend of Hua Mulan, specifically the Ballad of Mulan, which recounts the folktale. It originated from the Northern and Southern Dynasties era, 4th to 6th century AD. According to the legend, Mulan takes her aged father's place in the conscription for the army by disguising herself as a man. After a prolonged and distinguished military service against nomadic hordes beyond the northern border, Mulan is honored by the emperor, but declines a position of high office. She retires to her hometown, where she is reunited with her family and reveals her sex, much to the astonishment of her comrades. There is some debate there, Gareth. There is a belief amongst some people that Mulan was actually, in fact, a historical person.
Mm-hmm.
The story I've heard is said to mostly have played out as Disney have portrayed, except the sole reason she disguises herself as a man is to take her father's place in the war, not to find herself.
But the film is the sole reason she disguises herself as a man is to take her father's place in the war.
Some interesting notes here. People who think she's real also say her parents initially refused to let her go to war, so she puts on male clothes and challenges her own father to a duel, only revealing herself after she's beaten him, and they're like, oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, does she go like full Yu-Gi-Oh? It's time to duel!
She was at war for 12 years and rose to the rank of general, so she didn't fall in love with a hunky general, she was the general. No real talk of a love interest, as I said. It's rumoured that the emperor was so impressed with Mulan that he wanted to marry her off to his daughter, but she then revealed her gender to the surprise of everyone. She accepted her rewards for her service from the emperor and then returns home to her normal life.
Yeah. I like these kind of mythical figures who are like the myth and the man have become intertwined, or in here in the case the myth and the woman have become intertwined in a way that we don't really know what's what anymore. I kind of like, people are like, oh no, isn't it sad that history is lost, and it usually is, but I do kind of like the fact that we don't know everything all the time. You're like, maybe she was real.
And the fact that we don't know makes her even more interesting.
Is Cucullin real?
No.
Sure.
Like, that's the thing. Like, these legends have gone really far from their source material, which means that they are, in fact, legends, so there's no real truth in them anymore. Mm. But where these things begin, people think that, okay, the legend as it is told today is not true.
It's certainly embellished.
But they're based on real people.
Which is the same discussion that happens around Robin Hood a lot, isn't it?
Yes, we talked about that in our Robin Hood episode.
Yeah, so it's whether or not these people were actually historical figures.
The story was originally conceived by Disney to be a Tootsie-like romantic comedy film where Mulan, who is a misfit tomboy that loves her father, is betrothed to Shang, whom she has not met. So on her betrothal day, she basically runs away to war to carve her own destiny.
Thank God they didn't make that film, because it sounds much worse.
In November 1993, Chris Sanders, who had just finished work on The Lion King, was hoping to work on The Hunchback of Notre Dame, but was appointed to Mulan instead, acting as head of story. Sanders grew frustrated with the romantic comedy aspect and urged producer Pam Coates to be more faithful to the original legend by having Mulan leave home because of her love of her father.
Yeah, not all these things have to be bad romantic stories.
Or I want motifs where they go off to war because, as I said, she wants to find herself. Now, like, I would have liked to see, like, maybe, I don't know if the live action film goes here, like in the story that, you know, where, you know, there's a narrative when people think she's real, like, she full on goes with her parents' consent and knowledge, like, and she is the master of her own destiny. Less so in this film, but I do think that...
How do you not think she's the master of her own destiny?
In the sense that, like...
She's not forced to go. She's going to up to protect her father from his imminent demise because he blew his back out just swinging a sword.
Yeah, I think in the sense...
She doesn't have permission, but she's certainly doing it under her own will.
I think in the sense that society... I think what they're trying to portray is that society wouldn't approve of it. In fact, in this narrative, she'll be put to death if she's found out.
Yeah.
Whereas in the legend, she's more of an actual hero. And there's even further legend where people say that she didn't hide her gender at all.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that would be kind of badass. But yeah, I think the story here was trying to appeal to a certain audience, China, in fact.
Well, it got banned from China, so it didn't work.
it didn't get banned from China, but it got
heavily demarketed in China, yeah, so it didn't work.
It got torpedoed, so to speak.
Like, the equivalent of this, like, we'll release it, but we'll do everything we can to tank it.
But I do think this is the strongest female Disney character
today. Oh yeah, she kicks ass. She's way better than everyone else. And like, there is things like, whoa, does she really have to pretend to be a man? And it's like, yeah, okay, fine. But still.
And the whole subplot of her trying to find herself or trying to prove herself. It's, in fairness, it doesn't really...
But she's a woman in a man's world trying to kick butt, and she's being held down and she still kicks butt. Go Mulan. And there's interesting themes about honor and duty and respect, and a father who is willing to go to war. He at no stage says he doesn't want to go. He is not a coward. He will not back down. I need to blow my nose. He will, like, I think those are interesting themes. Those are much more interesting themes than stupid romance. It's like, oh, you're betrothed to this strong guy, tough guy. That sucks. I actually like her father character a lot. Because, like, he's like, warm, he's thoughtful, and, like, he's a little stern when he needs to be. When Mulan gets out of time, it's like, you will need to learn your place. But she was out of line.
And he's a product of his culture, like, and, you know, it's a bit...
And she's pushing up against that culture.
Yeah.
Which is the part of the boundary breaking she has to do in this film.
He'd rather go to war and die than be embarrassed by his daughter in public.
Yeah. And he is a war hero. And it's not even... No, it's not even being embarrassed by his daughter in public. It is being dishonorable. You know, it's not that I don't think he's like, oh, Mulan shouldn't speak here. It's like, I will do this. Because I have been called upon, and it is my duty to protect my country. Even though he's a freaking war hero. Yeah. He's already done it once.
When Mulan presents herself, or himself at the time, to the camp and shows the conscription papers, they go, the Fazu?
Yeah.
Like, he's like a well-known hero.
He's
in
a renowned warrior. And it leads to a fun line. It's like, he doesn't talk about me much. I can see why.
Yeah, we have a lot of montages in this film, as you said, Gar. There's a classic 90s montage as Mulan prepares to run away and take her father's place. For some reason, as a kid, I found the part where Mulan cuts her hair off with the sword really drastic. I don't know why, but I found it really unsettling. I really understand the metaphor now that I'm older. It's a pivotal moment in the evolution of the character.
Yeah, it's about leaving the past behind. It's a transformative moment. It's about...
There's no going back.
Yeah, it's about embracing change and embracing challenge and like literally cutting away the past.
Some really deep stuff there for a kid's film. Because there was no dragon in the original legend, Mulan did not have animal companions. It was Roy E. Disney who suggested that they create the character of Mushu.
Cute animal sidekick, baby!
Veteran story artist Joe Grant created the cricket character Cricky, though most of the animators did not want Cricky in the film.
I like Cricky too.
Every meeting they had, apparently, they were like, what's the cricket doing here? Why is it in the story? What's it doing right now? It's pointless. They wanted it out. I thought Cricky, don't get me wrong, if you took Cricky out of the film, there wouldn't be any difference, but I enjoyed the moments there, especially because Cricky doesn't speak and Mushu is the one that interprets his speech. So it's like, what do you mean you're not looking?
Yeah, I enjoyed Cricky. And like, Cricky is, I think, the slapstick set piece in the start of the film when Mulan is being assessed and Cricky is accidentally sabotaging her. Good stuff. Good slapstick comedy. And it's like, if you look at the two characters in this film, the two cute animal sidekicks, Mushu or Cricky, I take Cricky before I take Mushu.
Yeah, I was about to get onto that point, Gar. Eddie Murphy as Mushu, what are your thoughts?
Eh.
There's some good wisecracks in there, in fairness. There is a good bit of comedy in there, and he does act as that kind of Phil character like we saw in Hercules to kind of, you know, egg Mulan onto her destiny. But I do feel like even at the time, and it was enjoyable because I was a kid, I was like, oh, look at this funny character voiced by Eddie Murphy.
Cute animal sidekick, woo!
No, he would go on to have a more iconic animated performance, but now it's not...
What's his more iconic animated performance?
Donkey.
Oh yeah, Donkey, which I do prefer him.
Donkey.
I feel like Mushu is too much Eddie Murphy. But it's like Donkey is too much Eddie Murphy too. So why do I like Donkey and dislike Mushu?
Yeah, it's not so much that it's cultural appropriation or that it's inappropriate. I just think that it doesn't fit.
And it's just... And he does have a nice little narrative arc. I'm trying to think of why I don't like him. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it.
He's a shamed guardian who led one of the ancestors to disaster, and this is his one last shot to prove himself as a guardian.
Maybe it's just he's too much like Phil. Maybe that is it. Maybe it's just like, this is ground I think they've covered too much.
One film ago.
Yeah, that character arc, as you said, the one last shot at, you know, having his name be respected and getting his opportunity to be a true guardian is the exact same as Phil. So maybe that is why I'm bumming it. Because as you said, it's like Donkey is just Eddie Murphying it all over the place. So I can't be like, oh, it's Eddie Murphy being too much Eddie Murphy, because that other Eddie Murphy character being too much Eddie Murphy I like. So yeah, maybe it is just the similarities to Phil that I don't really like.
And as we can both agree, we prefer Phil.
Yes, Phil is much better.
Lee Shang, he has an interesting arc as well. He acts tough, but he really just wants to impress his dad, and I really forgot about that plot point. It doesn't ring with me from previous viewings, but it really stuck with me this time.
And he's a good leader.
And his father is killed before he can prove himself to him. There's a lot of good moments there.
And then he doesn't listen to Mulan, and the Emperor is nearly killed.
Because she's a woman.
Yeah. Well, she did also completely lie to him and betray him just immediately. But she also just saved his life immediately before that. So really,
like, they're literally
in the wrong here.
They're literally lauding Mulan having defeated the Huns. And then it's like, you're a woman. Never mind.
You will not die. But that is our pity for you.
Yeah. Now get out of here. Like, yeah, in real life, Mulan would have been toast when they found out they would have killed her.
I thought he was a good leader, though. As a leader of individuals who are willing to overcome their shortcomings and have patience with them and help them. And stand by them when, what's his name, the annoying evil guy. He's like, ah, they're bad. I will report you for them being bad. He's like, no, these people are good.
I think the romance here is sweet. But like, what I liked about it is that...
It's understated.
We don't see the payoff. They don't fall in love. One glance, they don't get married at the end, and what we see at the end is just the start of their relationship.
Yeah, he's invited over for dinner. That's the end of it. Like, if this film was a lot more about that romance, it would be a worse film.
And often, as we've talked about in previous films, it derails the plot and the story and brings it to a point where it's not very believable and it's just not enjoyable. Like, they stuck to the central story here, which I thought was smart.
Because, like, his relationship with Mulan for the majority of the film is a lot more like teacher-pupil than it is lovers. And I think the film is better off because of that.
Yeah, and I think if they would have tried to shoehorn that in at the end, it would have lost me. Yeah, wrapping up here on the story, Shan Yu as a villain, where do you land on him?
He's fine.
He's the only person in the movie not voiced by an Asian person.
Well, he's fine.
Yeah. And true to Formgar, he gets blown up at the end. Disney villains have one of two deaths. They get blown up or plunged to their doom.
He gets super exploded, though.
Yeah.
He is torn to shreds by those fireworks.
Yeah, it's not great. Yeah, I think that the threat of the Huns is just, I think he is the embodiment of the threat of the Huns, but as a character, he doesn't really have any depth. He just wants to invade and kill and destroy. So he's kind of a surrogate for the entire threat of the Hun army, rather than a distinct character in his own right.
By the way, you said, did you just say he's the only character in the film not voiced by an Asian person?
As far as I can remember. Oh, well, Eddie Murphy.
Yes, there's another pretty prominent one.
Well, he's not portrayed as, like,
he's Chinese. A dragon.
Yeah, he doesn't have an ethnicity.
Whereas Ming-Na Wen as Mulan, famously of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fame.
Yes, and Lea Salonga plays the singing voice.
I don't know who that is, but sure.
She's a famous Disney princess singer.
Sure, good for her.
She did Princess Jasmine as well.
Good. Donny Osmond does the singing voice of Li Shang.
He does. Fun fact as well, Gary, Jackie Chan played Li Shang.
I saw that and I'm like, why did you get Jackie Chan in the film but not put him in the English version? Because yeah. Jackie Chan was famous in the 80s or 90s, wasn't he?
His English wouldn't have been terribly strong though, but he could have read it.
Yeah. What's Jackie Chan not like already doing like Rush Hour at that stage?
He also does the singing voice.
Let me check when Jackie Chan became famous over here.
So he sings as Li Shang in the Chinese version as well. So he could have done it all.
Yeah, and like, maybe I'm just like, maybe he didn't become famous over here until like the late 90s. But it feels very weird to be like, Jackie Chan is in this film, but we haven't put them in the film. Police story. All right, apparently Jackie Chan didn't become famous in Hollywood until like the late 90s. Who would have thunk it?
I would have thought mid to early 90s. Yeah, like early to mid, sorry.
The fame in Hollywood section starts from 1999 on his Wikipedia page, so
I think his films would have been in the US by then, but they were dubbed. So, like, they would have been introduced to him in his, you know,
like Chinese films, yeah.
Yeah, and then he would have crossed over.
When was Rush Hour released?
I think that was 98, 97.
A sequel, Rush Hour, which would have been his breakout hit, I'd imagine. 98 was Rush Hour.
So same year.
Same year this came out would have been... I actually don't know. Is that his breakout hit? I think it is.
That's the one I most know him from.
That's the one I do know most think of Jackie Chan as, like, that's his big movie. So maybe he didn't actually become a big thing in the 98, which is the reason that he was only obviously in the Chinese version. Because, yeah, I read that. It's like, you had Jackie Chan and you didn't put him in the English version too?
Jackie Chan has a fascinating narrative because he was like a martial arts guy, then like Hollywood star. Now he's like a billionaire.
Yeah.
He owns everything in Hong Kong, from pet food to telecommunications and everything like that. So he's like a major mogul. He really made hay while the sun shone. That's a hard thing to say, Garrett. Give me a break.
Good job, Ken.
I got it out there. The music of this film, Gar, as I said, there is some bright sparks. Reflection is your standard I want song.
Yeah.
Where does it stack up with others for you?
It's fine. I actually prefer the song they sang with her mother before, more the kind of like...
You'll Bring Honor to Us All?
Yeah, the classic like, you know, musical theater opener, very similar to Belle, yeah, in terms of like the whisking around the town.
Setting the scene, telling us the story, setting the table, so to speak.
I enjoy that song more than I enjoy Reflections, actually.
Yeah, Reflection is nice. There's a Christina Aguilera version that's quite good as well.
Of course.
It's for the soundtrack.
It's always fun to be like, who is the person of the time that they do these versions? It's like, yeah, Christina Aguilera seems right.
Could have been Britney, but she was busy doing other things. Gar, I'll Make a Man Out of You is an all-time Disney pop. As we said earlier, it does a lot of heavy lifting in terms of the story, but it's also just a really great song.
Oh, it's so good. It's the best. Is it the best Disney song? I think we did an episode of The Weeknd Show on Best Disney Songs, and I think I said it was the best Disney song.
The Weeknd Show being our previous podcast that's now dead.
Yes, which we did some Disney content. So yeah, It's the best Disney song. It's the best. And it's so good.
And the bit where it comes back at the end for, you know, there's a reprise when they storm the castle. And like, that's like, really got my blood up. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's the song I love is back. It's so good. And it, as you said, it does so much work. And it's like, it's this big moment where Mulan proves herself as like worthy of being in the army, when she's just about to be booted out of the army for not being worthy of being in the army.
But it's also a subtle metaphor for men are the center of Chinese society. They have all the ideas. They know best, where Mulan is the only person that figures out that to get up the pole, you need to bring those two things together. You know, the was it strength and discipline or something like that?
Yeah.
Or like, so she...
Bring them together, yes. Yeah. You use that to help shimmy up the pole.
Yeah, so I thought that was a nice subtle metaphor for basically people who have always guarded the gate don't always know best. And
Men are stupid and don't use their heads is what we're learning.
And like, you need those other perspectives to move forward. Like,
women have brains and thus outthink us Neanderthals who are stupid, which is quite accurate.
You see it in the mountain pass as well, where Mulan comes up with a clever idea to defeat the Huns with one shot of a cannon rather than them rushing to their bloody massacre.
Yeah.
With brute force.
But yeah, I'll Make a Man Out of You is the best. It's just the best. It's such a good song.
A Girl Worth Fighting For is fun, but it is a middle of the road song. But the way the song stops dead as they encounter the destroyed village is really cleverly crafted, and it's such a gut punch.
Yeah, it's a nice little poignant moment. It turns the song on its head. It messes with expectations. You're like, oh, it's the happy, jovial. Oh no, shit has gone down.
Okay, the last point I have here on the music before Nicole covers it. There's a decent amount of praise for this film's score. I like the score, but
the score is great.
It isn't very noticeable for long periods of the movie for me. There's times when it swells, you know, during moments of tension or high action, and that's where it excels, but it's not up there for me.
I think the score was great.
Make your case.
I think it's great. Traditional Chinese instruments, what more can you want? I don't know, I think it's just a good score.
I like the bits where, you know, like, they're like, you know, it kind of, you know, Mulan is being brave and stuff, like, or, you know, there's like a moment of high action. There's a kind of a...
They play loud noises and you feel good.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's hard to describe.
You see, I don't have the vocabulary really to describe music like that. I just think it's affecting and it works.
Yes, that's why we leave this to Nicole, because she gets it.
But yeah, I'll Make a Man Out of You. It's like the best Disney song. It's so good. Donny Osmond. It's the best thing any of the Osmonds have ever done.
Yeah, it works as a pop song as well. I know there's bits, you know, like referring to the Huns and stuff like that, but like, it's just like, it's such a good song.
Who doesn't love their pop songs talking about defeating Huns? Didn't Donny Osmond host a quiz show about pyramids once? Am I imagining that? Was that a different Osmond?
There's many Osmonds.
There is. Let me Google Osmond Pyramid.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the legacy of this film while you do that.
This is the more important part. Kingdom Hearts!
Yes. Is it in Kingdom Hearts?
It's in Kingdom Hearts 2. There's a whole level. The Pyramid Game, which was hosted by Donny Osmond. Yeah, I didn't make that up.
Why would you be watching that?
I don't know why I remember things. I think when I was in America, one of the times they have it was on TV.
That makes sense.
But Donny Osmond, it's apparently a long-running show since 1973, but Donny Osmond hosted it for 2 years. There you go. See? I'm not making things up, and I will stick by the fact that I'll Make a Man of You is better than the Pyramid Game, yes, hosted by Donny Osmond.
When he dies, it's going to be on his headstone.
It's like, yeah, I'll Make a Man Out of You. Be a man. It's the best song.
Disney was keen to promote Mulan to the Chinese audience, hoping to replicate their success with The Lion King, which was one of the country's highest grossing Western films at the time. Disney also hoped it would smooth over relations with the Chinese government, which had soured after the release of Kun Dun, a Disney-funded biography of the Dalai Lama that the Chinese government considered too politically provocative. China, as a result, had threatened to curtail business negotiations with Disney over that film, and also the Chinese government at the time, and even now I think, only accepts 10 foreign films per year, which meant that Mulan was unlikely to be chosen. Finally, after a year's delay, the Chinese government did allow the film to be released in China, but it got a limited release also after the Chinese New Year, so as to ensure that local films dominated the more lucrative holiday period. As a result, the box office income was extremely low due to the unfavorable release date combined with rampant piracy. Chinese people also complained that Mulan's depiction was too foreign looking and the story is too different from the myths, so they would have liked a more faithful adaptation as well.
That's always the case with all these people wanting their books and films and all that stuff to be represented properly. Also, like, totally, like, we'll release it in a year, so everyone will have stolen it by then. Ah!
I'm surprised that they allowed this film to be released, because the Communist Party in China don't like films that depict spirituality or ghosts, because they consider them to undermine the regime for some reason.
Yes, it's called what they call censorship.
That's why Ghostbusters, the most recent one with women, was banned in China. And this depicts not only spirituality, but, you know, ancient Chinese spirituality. So you think that would have been banned in China, but it wasn't.
Well, yeah, they let it in eventually.
But they torpedoed it. Yeah, they made sure it failed.
It's weird that, like, Disney probably, like, all right, we need to smooth over relations with China, so we'll make a film about China. And then China are like, fuck you guys. We don't care.
Yeah.
But also, like, we do have that very weird, like, people do toe around China in a way that is deeply cynical and rather upsetting. That, like, they basically just give in to censorship and allowed, like, because China is a very lucrative market for all of these countries, for companies now.
And they have a lot of foreign investments, so a lot of American companies have Chinese interests as well.
Yeah, so it is increasingly reaching the stage where, like, Chinese interests are being represented in these films in a way that is actually quite malicious. And other interests that are perhaps should be represented in these kind of things are being pushed out by Chinese interests. And that's very, very bad. But, hey, it's a talking dragon, isn't it fun?
Mulan earned a Golden Globe and Academy Award nomination and won several Annie Awards.
Did not get nominated for Best Song.
It did not get.
What an absolute travesty. A song from Babe Pig in the City got nominated that year. Hey,
it won an Annie Award for Best Animated Feature.
I don't care. It didn't, like, okay, Best Original Song. I'm going to read to you the songs that got nominated before this, because I was very upset. A song from Babe Pig in the City, Ken, got nominated.
Which is a film I have wiped from my memory. It was that disappointing.
Especially because Babe is, like, one of the best films of all time.
Babe is almost a perfect film. If I get a chance to talk about it on a podcast, I will.
All right, 1998, The Prince of Egypt, Stephen Schwartz, remember him? He wrote a song that got nominated. All these films have had better music ever since he got kicked to the curb.
What song did When You Believe?
When You Believe.
That's a good song, in fact.
I don't know what it is. Armageddon, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. All right.
Yeah, banger.
Can't deny that. And Randy Newman's song from Babe, I don't even know what it is. I'm sure it's good.
Let me try and guess it. I'm a pig in the city. I don't know where I am.
Unsurprisingly, it's called That'll Do. The Horse Whisperer, A Soft Place to Fall, apparently got nominated. Quest for Camelot, The Prayer, apparently got nominated. I'll Make a Man Out of You did not get nominated, and that is a travesty.
Which song won again?
Prince of Egypt song.
Well, I can see that.
Stephen Schwartz, he wrote the songs for freaking Hunchback, and he wrote the songs for, what was the other one he wrote for? It wasn't the last one, it was the one before that, so it would have been Hunchback and Pocahontas. Yes. Is the two he did. Which, to be fair, he won for Colors of the Wind, so, you know, he should have been happy. He won one of them.
Jeffrey Katzenberg poached him to DreamWorks. DreamWorks created the film The Prince of Egypt.
Yes. Wasn't that DreamWorks' first film?
I don't think so.
Their first big animated feature? No, I think I'll check this while you continue.
It might have been their first release. A 2004 direct-to-video sequel, Mulan 2. Ants
was their first one.
Yes, which was a bit contentious, but we'll...
Rip off of A Bug's Life.
We had to leave off for the Bug's Life episode.
Or the DreamWorks episodes when we get around to it, because we were mentioning Chris Sanders earlier, who also did How to Train Your Dragon. And Lilo and Stitch, so clearly very good man.
Finally, a live-action adaptation directed by Nicky Caro was released on September 4th, 2020 as a Disney Plus exclusive after its theatrical release was delayed multiple times due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Have you heard of it?
Mulan, we're talking about it. We've been talking about it for an hour.
Actually, I kind of intended to watch that film because it's now free on Disney Plus.
It was under the $30 thing for a while. I'm like, nah, that's not happening.
I wanted to see what the differences were before we reviewed this podcast, but I'm a bad host, so I did not.
Well, we saw Beauty and the Beast. We gave people that update. It's horrible. I hate it.
It's okay.
It's horrible. I hate it.
It's fine.
I deeply, deeply detest it with every fiber of my being.
I think Mulan, in a lot of ways, as we said, encapsulates everything that Disney does well in a movie.
Is this film better than Hercules? I think this film is better than Hercules.
It pains me to say it, Cara, but I think you're right.
I think, because, like, I think Hercules, on average, has better music. On average. But I'll Make a Man Out of You is better than anything in Hercules. I think this film has prettier animation. I think this film has better plotting. I think this film has a better story. So I think this film is better than Hercules. If you swapped Phil and Mushu from their respective films, that would really give the home run to her friggin' Mulan. And like, Hercules does have a better villain, because as much as I have issues with the scripting of Hades these days, because it's very lazy, who the ant stuff. But I don't know. Is it better than Hercules?
Shan Yu is a weak villain, but I think
Shan Yu is very boring.
He's a conduit for the threat in general, as we said earlier. Yeah. So I'm not going to say it's a masterpiece, but it's a very well made film.
Yeah,
with extremely satisfying payoffs, both in terms of the music and the story. It's really nice to look at. As I said, it has a very harmonious view, and I always appreciate, as I said, when they have a specific point of view for the style of a film. It didn't really work in Hercules. They're trying it again with Mulan. It was much more successful. So I think Mulan is one of those films that it's not like top of people's lists, but I think if you want to see what Disney does at its best, you need to watch this film.
Yeah, this, even though this is not the best film of the Disney Renaissance and not by a long shot, I would say that this, maybe it is the peak, because I would say this is Disney at the peak of their powers.
It's the most accomplished.
It's like, this is people who know what they're doing making a film. It's a lot of people coming together. It's like, we'll nail the songs, we'll nail the animation, we'll nail the tone, we'll nail the story. Mulan will be an interesting character and a woman with agency for once, God forbid. And we'll actually do something interesting and good, and we'll have interesting themes about like loyalty and service and duty, ideas that you don't get in a lot of children's films, which is actually quite cool. And it'll all work together as this cohesive whole that is a perfect packaged piece of entertainment as I drop all my peas at once.
Your plosives.
My plosives are explosives-ing all over the place. But it is Disney at their, like, I don't want to say assembly line, because that makes it sound like mechanical
and cynical.
Lacking art, and maybe it is a tad cynical because it's corporate entertainment. It's always a tad cynical. There's always an element of cynicism in there, but it is assembly line in a good way. Assembly line of very talented people all coming together to make something that, again, will not surprise you in any way. There's nothing in this film that you'd be like, whoa, really? But everything in this film, you're like, ah. Oh.
It's also made with a surprising cultural sensitivity.
To our dumb white Irish people eyes.
When we talk about the reception in China, nothing was said about how it was offensive. It was all about it wasn't close enough to their myth. So they think they had a problem with how they Americanized the story so much as the actual depiction of Chinese people, which is a plus.
Yes. So to our dumb Irish white people eyes, looks fine. But who knows? We're not Chinese. We're not the people to speak to that. It's always the problem. They haven't made a film about Irish people yet. I said, well, what? No, Brave is set in like Gaelic Scotland, isn't it?
Yeah, they made Darby O'Gillan the Little People. That's a live action Disney film.
Oh no.
Although, in fairness, Brown Bag tend to have the whole Irish myth thing sewn up these days.
Yeah, so make an Irish film so we can speak to whether we're... It was Cú Chulainn real like 15 minutes ago, but still.
That could be a good one.
They should do Cú Chulainn.
There's rumours of that. I don't know if it was Disney, but there's rumours that they're going to do a Cú Chulainn film. I think maybe it was like Leo DiCaprio attached or something like that. Ooh. But I would like to see it in animation. Like
How about get an Irish actor?
The Irish myths, though...
It would be Aidan Gillen then, though. No, do Leo. Take Leo.
Yeah, the Irish myths would make fertile ground for... an animated spectacular.
Or what's his name from that show everyone likes? Normal People? What's the name of your man from that?
Oh, God.
He wore the shorts, and everyone was like, look at him wearing shorts. I have to look up his name now. Torment Ken as he tries to work out.
Come on. You know, don't you have one of those situations where you're trying to force your brain to spit out the information that won't do it?
Paul Mescal.
His name has been said. Actually, it's 2021 now. His name has hit my ears at least 1,000 times in 2020, and I couldn't bring up that information.
I didn't actually watch Normal People. So yeah, Paul Mescal would probably be the lead in it now.
He would.
Which is better than Aidan Gillen. So.
That's true. He is like... the least Irish person I've ever seen on screen.
My problem with Aidan Gillen is everything he's in, he tries to do a voice that isn't an Irish accent, and by the end of the film he's just doing his Irish accent. It's the most bizarre thing.
So strange. But this is a Disney podcast and we will leave it there. Mulan, good film.
I think it's Disney at the peak of its powers as producing a professional piece of entertainment.
Alright, Disney soldiers, that's nearly a wrap for Magic by Design for another week. Resident musical expert Nicole is coming up in just a few moments with her own take on a song from the movie. It's honestly the best part of the show every week, so be sure to stay tuned for that at the end.
You mean my snot-filled nose isn't the best part of the show this week?
Surprisingly not, Garrett.
Oh, no.
You can find new episodes of Magic by Design every Monday, where all magical podcasts are downloaded. Check out her website at magicbydesign.buzzsprout.com to find a full list of podcast providers. There you'll also find all our previous episodes if you're catching up or feel like revisiting an old favorite. Magic by Design is also on all your favorite social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/magicbydesignpod, on Twitter at magicdesignpod, and on Instagram at magicbydesignpod. If you enjoy listening to our Disney critiques and want to support the show, please do consider leaving us a review on your podcast platform of choice, share the podcast on your socials, or even recommend the show to a fellow Disney fan. If you give us a 5-star review, you will bring honor to your family and us all.
Yes, it is your duty to this podcast.
Don't shame your father.
your father named Ken.
Or mother or parent. It's 2021.
Guardian, anybody. Don't shame your dragon spirit. Don't shame Eddie Murphy. That's really what we're getting at here.
Or he'll make another sequel.
Or Donkey.
We'll be back next week at the same time, same place, with a review of Disney's 37th animated feature, Tarzan. But until then, stay safe and remember, no matter how the wind howls, the mountain cannot bow to it.
No. Unless it's like super eroded over time and then collapses. The wind does win in the end.
The wind plays the long game.
Yeah. It's like, I will whittle you away a little bit every century and eventually you will crumble.
Yeah.
Really a metaphor for patience instead of strength.
Yes. Well done.
End the podcast.
Now then, Nicole is channeling her inner Christina this week with a cover of Reflection from Mulan. Thanks for listening and over to you, Nicole.
Hello there, Disney fans. It's me, your musical correspondent, Nicole, coming to you live from my bedroom. It's time to reflect on Mulan, and guys, there was some amount of drama with the music side of things for this movie. So I know you've heard me mention Jeffrey Katzenberg a few times as chairman of Walt Disney Studios. Well, after finishing up at Disney, he co-founded and became CEO of DreamWorks Animation. Stephen Schwartz was lined up to write the music and lyrics for Mulan. After a research trip to China, Katzenberg contacted Schwartz to come on board to write for the Prince of Egypt. Schwartz agreed, and Peter Snyder, then president of Walt Disney Feature Animation, threatened to remove all of Schwartz's credits with Disney to date. So, Schwartz quit. The dram. Matthew Wilder came on board to work on the songs for the film. Wilder is an American vocalist and record producer known for his number two hit, Break My Stride, released in 1983. He has produced records for Christina Aguilera, Kelly Clarkson, No Doubt, and Miley Cyrus, to name a few. Wilder also lent his voice to the movie, singing for Ling. David Zappel also came on board to write lyrics. With the score, initially British composer Rachel Portman was hired to write the music. However, she fell pregnant and backed out. So instead, acclaimed composer Jerry Goldsmith signed on. So after a treacherous musical beginning, the team was in place and got the job done. The soundtrack was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Musical or Comedy Score, but lost out to Shakespeare in Love. However, the single Reflection, sung by Christina Aguilera, launched her career and came in at 19 on the Adult Contemporary chart. Lea Salonga sang the role of Mulan, while Ming-Na Wen voiced the character. This was a common trend for all the characters, separating singing and voice. This week, I couldn't leave Reflection behind. So here it is. I hope you enjoy it.
Look at me. I will never pass for a perfect bride or a perfect daughter. Can it be? I'm not meant to play this part. Now I see that if I were truly to be myself, I would break my family's heart.
Sure.